Those of you that have listened to my podcast in the past know I'm all about American made. You know, I think there should be more manufacturing here in America. And why isn't there? Well, it goes back a number of decades to some decision making that we're going to explain here later. But one of the companies I have found while I've been digging in and looking for American made is a company called American Giant. They are located in San Francisco, but their supply chains are all over America. And this is one of their sweatshirts. It says American made, and then you can see the letters Giant there. I bought this. This is not an infomercial. This is to get you to think about why it is so important that we don't just buy all of our stuff from China or other places. China is a particular one for me because of their horrible record on human rights. But the CEO founder of this company, American Giant, is a guy named Byard Winthrop. He is smart. He has integrity. You may have seen him on Mike Rowe's podcast if you're a fan. This guy, this is the kind of guy you want to run for president. I'll leave it at that. You're going to meet him next.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya podcast.
You know, after a long day, no one wants to spend an hour in the kitchen making dinner. Well, how about quick and easy barbecue? No, I'm not talking about takeout. I'm talking juicy steaks, succulent chicken or fish, and healthy grilled veggies cooked on your own Solaire infrared gas grill. Solaire grills are the hot, fast grills that heat up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even in the dead of winter. True. And that heat locks in juices and flavor and grills your food faster. It's a veteran-owned company, multi-generational family business, and each Solaire grill is made in the USA out of quality commercial-grade stainless steel. It will be the last grill you ever need to buy. Visit besthotgrill.com for their free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill. For apartment balconies to backyard entertainment areas, that's besthotgrill.com. With a hot, fast Solaire infrared gas grill, you'll want to grill every single day. Get your free guide at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com.
Byard, it is so nice to finally meet you. I have been a fan of your company from afar, and it's just great to be able to talk to someone who does something that I think is so important on so many levels. So welcome.
Michelle, good to be with you. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time, too, so it's an honor to be on.
I appreciate it. So you decide to make American-made clothing. Why?
Well, that's maybe a slightly longer story. You know, I'd spent so much of my career making products, starting off making them in the States, and then over time progressively moving the manufacturing of them overseas for reasons of cost. And if you do that enough, you inevitably confront the reality of the human cost of that. And for me also the kind of the disconnection from the product that I was making. And I had just reached a point where I was kind of done with abandoning manufacturing partners that had stuck by me when we were getting started for, you know, 25 cents a part. And then more broadly, I think so much of what's happening in the country these days is this kind of growing divide between people that live in San Francisco like I do that are maybe working in tech or working in some other profession that has been inoculated from the last 40 years, and those men and women that make things in this country. And I felt that we have to start kind of making some decisions that support communities that manufacture. And I wanted to be a part of that. So I guess it's for multiple reasons, but yeah. But that's the big one.
We're experiencing instability at every level. Our government lacks leadership, and Bidenomics has been a disaster. The economy is in a fragile state. Inflation has been a consistent issue. High interest rates have put significant pressure on the real estate market. There have been major bank failures, and many analysts say a stock market correction is likely overdue. We have global conflicts in Europe and the Middle East that have the potential to spread, but gold has soared to record highs even amidst the tensions. There are so many reasons that Americans should consider investments in gold and silver, and legacy precious metals is the gold standard. I love Legacy Precious Metals because of their zero hassle, education first approach. They can help you roll your traditional IRA into a gold IRA or ship metals directly to your house. Go to legacypminvestments.com to download their free gold investing guide. I've read it and there's so much valuable information there. Friends, now is not the time to roll the dice with your hard-earned money. Find out about the growth potential that gold offers you. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today and tell them I sent you.
I mean, that speaks to just an integrity that you feel about what you're doing. And that does seem in short supply. I've seen companies where they started off manufacturing in America, and I loved, you know, buying from those companies. And then the next thing I know, I get something from them, look closer at the label, and suddenly it's made in China. Yeah. And I can understand, how would you describe to the layman that temptation and that, in some ways, a real business need to outsource your manufacturing to make it so much more profitable? I mean, is it purely about profits?
Unfortunately, it is. Well, a lot of it's about profits. Some of it's about just ease. I think it, just to sort of maybe track the last 30 or 40 years of U.S. policy, you know, in my judgment, we made a decision about, you know, 35, 40 years ago to put at the center of our foreign policy decision making or economic policy decision making, consumption. And when you do that, and it sort of optimizes for putting in front of the consumers the widest variety of choice at the lowest possible price, a whole bunch of things follow. Some good, like you and I now can go out and buy a flat screen TV for $199 or whatever it is. And that wasn't the case 20 years ago. But some of the bad things that happen is that when you put consumption at the center of our policy, as opposed to production at the center of our policy, you begin to hollow out the ability to make things, and communities suffer and capability suffers. So it is, on the face of it, cheaper. If you go chase places that have low environmental regulation or low human rights standards or low labor rates, you can make things for less money. So that's a powerful motivation. And I think also over time, as the domestic capability has struggled in industries like textiles, it gets harder and harder to make things domestically. So as amazing a journey as it has been for American Giant, it's been hard. You know, we've really had to stand up the capability in many cases. So you have to be willing to fight through that as well, and deal with the slightly higher cost that is a reality about making things in America.
But the beauty is, when I buy something from American Giant, and no, this is not a commercial, but you know, you're not paying me to be on here. This is genuinely something from my heart. When you buy something from American Giant, it's going to last you 10, 15, 20 times longer than a cheap t-shirt you're going to get that's imported from overseas. And I know this from experience. I mean, the quality of your stuff is so high. And you're going to want to wear it all the time anyway. So, you know, you only need a few pieces here and there.
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, I think our perspective basically is that we've got to keep you as a customer based on quality and value. Yeah. And if in addition to that, you appreciate how we manufacture things and our commitment to the U.S., that's a bonus to me. But I really have to acquire you and keep you as a customer because you love the product and you think it's a good value. And that sort of gets back a little bit closer to what I was saying earlier, that there's a different experience. I don't know how much time you spent in factories, but when you're really close to the men and women that are making things and you're inside facilities that are making, you're touching and feeling the product that you're making, it's a different paradigm than if you're going to Shenzhen or Guangzhou and you get there maybe twice a year. When you go, there are language barriers, and oftentimes you don't have the kind of access or ability to get in and touch and feel the products that you're making. And I can just say, for me, that's another big piece of why I wanted to stay close by, is when you are in the supply chain and you're working with the men and women that grow our cotton or that spin our yarn or that knit our cloth, you've got a higher sense of responsibility to that product, I think. And so we certainly appreciate that benefit. It allows us to make better products, I think, because we can be so close to it, so on top of it, in such partnership with the people that are making the product. So it's nice to hear that being said by someone like you. I really appreciate it, but it is core to what we're trying to do as a business.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It makes sense to me, and it shows in everything that you do. And I'm hesitant to get too political about this, but let me approach it from this way. When I think about things being manufactured in China, I cannot erase from my mind the human rights issues there. There is slavery in China. China is a hostile foreign power that would, you know, love to rule the world, I'm sure. And so I have a real visceral reaction to anything that's made in China. Like, I'm always looking at labels. And I'm sure there are other countries too I should be looking more closely at. But this one seems to me to be a behemoth. And couple that with when we saw the supply chain issues during COVID, there were companies who couldn't get their stuff.
Yep.
And then there's that question of, what if China just decides they don't want to deliver it anymore? So how would you answer those questions to people who say, it's made in China, I don't care?
Well, the irony about the sort of framing comment, which is I'm hesitant to get political about this. In my mind, this isn't political. I think it should be a deeply bipartisan thing. I think we're so focused on divisions in the country. And this is one area where I would like to think that if you're left of center, you deeply value the environmental standards, the human rights standards, the minimum wage standards, the worker safety laws that we have in place domestically. And I would hope that if you're to the left of the aisle, that you feel like those things are valuable human rights that should be applied broadly, not just in the United States, but in other places that we manufacture. So I don't view it as a political question. I think, my perspective is exactly as you've enumerated, that we made a bet 30 or 40 years ago that if we opened up countries like China, that the net effect of that would be that it would bring them into the first world order. They'd become members of the first world order. They'd become better partners to us. And in fact, the opposite has happened, that China is a much more intractable foe today than it was 40 years ago. It's a much wealthier country today. And to your point, it's not clear to me that China always has the United States' best interests at heart. That doesn't mean I want to be a nationalist and shut down the borders and end trade. It does mean that I think we ought to be thinking a little bit about what the implications are of our trade policy and why, for example, we think it is wise to hold domestic manufacturers to high standards, appropriately high standards in my mind. They're good. But if we're going to do that, does it make sense for us to then allow our international competitors to ignore human rights laws, to ignore environmental laws, and play on an unequal playing field toward domestic manufacturers? That's insane to me. That's insane. Because what you end up doing is you have rural and urban communities, whether you're on the left or the right, rural and urban communities that are no longer participating in good and viable work and putting themselves and their families in a position to get ahead. And I just think that's crazy. And I think there's the beginnings of good news coming out of DC on both sides of the aisle, and both the Biden and the Trump administration and their trade policy. I hope that accelerates, because it is so clearly an obvious thing for, I think, all of us as Americans to think about that. It doesn't seem to make sense to me to abandon the men and women that are trying to hold down good jobs in this country and make good things in this country by creating trade deals that put them on a totally unfair competitive disadvantage to our international partners.
I couldn't agree more. And as you're sitting here speaking and pointing out the obvious that it should not be a political issue, it comes to my mind that I wonder if people have asked you to run for office. Has it happened?
It's not happened. No, no.
It hasn't?
But I'll tell you, Michelle, I think, I just think that we all as Americans need to dial up a little bit our thinking about stuff like this and not be such. I think we've gotten ourselves into a situation where over the last couple of years, the last couple of decades, we've become so consumption focused that it has just kind of blurred our the broader conversations we all ought to be having about policy. And that drives me just crazy. And my desire to run for political office is low. Just looking at all the rancor that's happening in DC, right? I mean, it's just like, it's just so unpleasant. So I'd rather try to do things on the sidelines where hopefully I can have more of an impact.
I get that feeling completely. Clearly so does my canine companion over here. And we will be able to mute out much of his barking, he's fired up.
That's great.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm not going to name names, but I did get into a discussion with the CEO of another clothing manufacturer, more of a high-end women's line, and, you know, dresses and blouses and things like that. And I called them out on what was then Twitter, now X, about making things in China. And they got upset with me and they reached out to me and said, "What is it you want?" And I said, "I'd like to see more manufacturing in here in America or countries that are not hostile toward us." And it was really a fascinating conversation with this person. They said, "You know, I don't disagree with you. I don't." But it seemed like they were really stuck. They felt, at least, that they were very stuck. And by the way, this is expensive clothing. So I don't believe that they need to manufacture somewhere where it's incredibly inexpensive to do so, because this is expensive stuff. I would guess that the profit margins would be just fine if they move their manufacturing elsewhere. What is the state? Like, how available is textile manufacturing here in the United States? Like, if someone did decide, okay, you know what? We're going to move our needles out of China. We're going to come back to North Carolina, Louisiana, wherever. Yep. How difficult is it?
Well, it's a varied answer. So in some cases it's quite easy. In some cases it's harder. And so, we went on a journey about 4 years ago to build a yarn dyed flannel shirt in the United States, and that proved to be really challenging because so much of that capability had left. But making a knit dress or a knit shirt is very easy. But I will say, I think, just to rewind for a second, in some ways I'm really sympathetic with that point that they're feeling stuck. And I would just sort of maybe expand on that for a little bit, that we have created a situation where there is very little incentive for brands to manufacture in the United States because we've created trade deals that are sort of wide open to anywhere in the world that can make stuff as cheaply as possible. And textiles in some ways are the most clear example of that because they're so transportable that needle, as you phrased it, moves wherever the cheapest and lowest regulations are in the world. And so that was originally New England to South Carolina. I mean, the South, because that was cheaper labor rates. Then it was to Central and South America. Then it was to Asia. Now it's going to Africa, kind of wherever we can go, Bangladesh, where we can find very, very, very cheap needle costs and very low regulations. That's a policy issue. And so to that brand that you were speaking to, what are we asking her? You know, are we asking her to say, just out of pure moral clarity, I'm gonna raise my costs next to my competitive set, but for some reason I think makes moral sense. And yes, I hope there is some of that, but I sure as heck hope that the politicians in DC, the left and the right, support that move and begin to make it harder to you, as you pointed out earlier, to allow us to manufacture things in places like Xinjiang, where there are, you know, they're using forced labor and they're sterilizing women.
Yeah.
And that's an uncomfortable topic for Americans maybe to sit with, but that's just the reality. It's true. And I think policymakers, I think retailers, like the major retailers, brands and consumers all have a role to play there. And I think it starts with the political set. And as I said earlier, we're beginning to see some movement there, but boy, do I wish it was happening a bit more decisively.
When you say we're beginning to see movement there, what is it that you're seeing that it makes you hopeful?
Well, I think, you know, I'll for the purpose of this discussion, remain completely agnostic politically. Mm-hmm. Whatever you may think of the Trump administration, they brought into sort of the front of the national mindset this question about trade. Trump's USTR trade representative was a man named Bob Lighthizer. He very much began the conversation about the need and the importance of production and putting production at the center of what we do, because such good things flow out from good production. If you have a robust production center, as China does, and as the EU does, I would argue, you create an environment where small businesses, dairies, manufacturing centers thrive. Very different than what's happening in the United States. The United States has a lot of monopolies, a lot of huge, huge players, and then a bunch of much, much smaller players because our trade policies incentivize that outcome. So Bob Lighthizer and the Trump administration begins to push back on that and says, no, we're going to turn the wheel a bit here and get back towards production being at the center of how we think about things. And then in comes the Biden administration and, you know, two administrations that don't see eye to eye on much. Biden's USTR is a woman named Ambassador Tai. And her perspective about trade is very, very similar to Bob Lighthizer's. And that's interesting that you have two administrations that are so opposed, and at least in my judgment, appropriately, they have converging views about trade negotiation and trade policy. So I think that's hopeful. I think some of the retailers are waking up to this question, the large national retailers. And I think, to your point, that on the brand side, whether it's American Giant that's taken this leap or this company that you were talking to, there is this innate sense of like, I have some responsibility in this. I can be a force for good. And so I'm an optimist. I think that we've seen over our lifetime that the job of making things here has gotten easier and easier. To your point, the pandemic helped that a ton.
Yeah.
And I think good things are coming there. I think consumers increasingly intuitively understand like, gosh, you know, China is not the best place in the world for us. And I don't like this idea of pushing a button on Amazon and having a pair of sneakers arrive at my door for $8 that I have no idea where they're made and they kind of fall apart in 6 months. I think there's an intuitive sense that the quality's not there and maybe the underlying values aren't there. So I think we're going to see some ongoing improvements in the coming years. And I think we've already seen it since the pandemic.
I hope and pray that you're right. When I'm watching the Super Bowl this year and I see the Temu or Temu ads and they ran like four or five times.
It's crazy.
And shop like a billionaire, you know, because our stuff is so dirt cheap that you can get whatever you want for about 13 cents and, you know, it'll ship right to your door. It made me nauseous.
Yeah, it's worse than you think, Michelle, because, there's a trade loophole and not to get too wonky on your audience, but it's referred to as de minimis. And de minimis is a trade loophole that could be closed tomorrow, could be signed and closed tomorrow by President Biden. De minimis allows, I think the number is $800, that if you as a consumer buy anything and have it shipped directly to you, that can come in duty-free below $800. So that means not only does a brand like Temu be able to have access to the U.S. market essentially in a completely unfettered way, the most valuable market in the world, getting unfettered access from a brand like that, but it also comes in with virtually no scrutiny about environmental integrity around it, not only how it was made, but what kind of paint's being used on the product, where it's coming from. Is it coming from Xinjiang or is it coming from some place that is actually responsible? So there's very little oversight and it's coming in duty free. If you reverse that and said American Giant wants to sell a sweatshirt into someone in China, I'd get whacked with duties in reverse that do not apply to Chinese manufacturers coming to the United States. So the system's broken in that way. And I think maybe that's the counterpoint to my optimism is, to what extent does DC really give a S about what's going on? And are they willing to take some hard stands to begin to close some of these loopholes, to begin to give U.S. manufacturers a competitive chance? So anyway, I think that it is that I had the same reaction during the Super Bowl. I find it just outrageous. It just drives me insane. And I think that we as citizens kind of lose something when we are not having our kind of national values upheld like that. It drives me crazy. So
I'm right there with you. I think before I let you go, I'd like to ask two things. One, how have you seen your brand grow? It would seem to me that there are a lot of people like me that really appreciate what you do.
Well, I'll give you kind of a really quick history in the business. So we started about 12 or 13 years ago, and we started with a single sweatshirt, men's only. And I poured about a year of my life into making that thing as good as I could. And then we got really, really lucky. That sweatshirt got named the greatest hoodie ever made and had a bunch of press written about it. And to your quality point, just sort of appreciating the amount of care and investment gone into that thing. And that original article and the ones that followed, basically, I think without those, we wouldn't be here, to be honest with you, Michelle. I think those were critical for us in terms of the evolution of the business. And it got us growing and it got us bigger so that we could begin to have a bit more muscle in the supply chain and could expand into other programs. So today, the business is a lot different. It's a lot bigger today. It's got men's and women's, tops and bottoms, knits and wovens. We make denim. We make jackets. We make sweatshirts. We make T-shirts, all this different stuff. And though we are still predominantly online, we've got 7 retail stores across the country. So the business is a lot different. Underneath it, the basic commitment to quality and our values has remained unchanged. But I do think that, and this, I think, really, you sort of alluded to this earlier, I think it's accelerated with the pandemic a bit, that when those globalized supply chains, which have been so optimized around cheap, right, they're just this very elaborate system to get you the absolute cheapest component parts for a product that you possibly can, the pandemic really exposed that as being super fragile. And as we all know, it kind of broke and we couldn't get stuff into ports. We couldn't get stuff into stores when we needed them. And I think that there was sort of the consumer piece of that, where it was this sort of response like, oh shit, I can't get, you know, whatever it is that I need. And then maybe a more fundamental one, which is, and I actually wrote about this during the pandemic, my daughter had gotten sick and I went down to get Motrin for her at the local Walgreens and it was sold out. And I was like, wait, hold on, what's going on here? And I went home and I did a little bit of research and lo and behold, about 98% of the Motrin that we consume as Americans is made in China. As is about 98% of the penicillin, as is a lot of the medical equipment we needed during the pandemic. I don't know if you know our role in that, but we got involved in the mask making business for FEMA and for the CDC. But those things, I think, should cause all of us to be like, whoa, what's going on here a little bit? Like, we need to have that capability still. So I think that happened for consumers, and I think that raised it a bit more. I think it got brands and retailers and consumers all to begin to think like, and policymakers. So that little by little, that's resulted in volume coming into the domestic textile business. And the more people that are participating there, the better it gets for all of us, but for us as well, because you've got just more business and more elasticity in the system. So it's a long-winded way of saying, I think it's gotten easier and easier for us as we've gotten bigger. We also understand the supply chain much more. And I think in some ways we're unique in that we've made a real commitment to domestic manufacturing. So we've over time built really amazing relationships throughout the supply chain with people that have been with us for a long time. And they've become really invaluable partners to us in our ability to make the things that we make. And we've gotten better at it and faster at it. So I think it's gotten generally easier as we've gotten larger and grown.
And because of that success, how much do you see other maybe copycats coming in? I'd like to see it. I'd just like to see more manufacturing here.
Me too. I think we're seeing some of that. I mean, if you go into our supply chain, you should do this with some time, by the way. Come through, do a Southeastern tour, and it'll take you from cotton all the way to a finished product in 36 hours. It's pretty remarkable when you get to see up close how amazing and complex it is to make a T-shirt or a sweatshirt. But if you go in and ask those people, whether it's the people that are ginning the cotton or yarning it or knitting it or cutting and sewing it or dyeing and finishing it, they'll all tell you that the volume is coming up. So that's a good sign. It means that whether it's in response to the pandemic, in response to shifting consumer demand, people are making more stuff domestically, and that's an unalloyed good for all of us. Are we seeing brands that are leaping in the way that we are? I haven't seen much of that in lock, stock, and barrel because it's such a commitment. Yeah. But I'm with you. I hope more do. But you know, I'll just say, we're a purist, Michelle. We're all in on American made, but you don't have to be. You know, you could be a big brand and say, listen, I'm going to take 5% of my T-shirt business and make it domestically, or 5% of my underwear business. I don't care. But it would be great to see some of these brands making a stand, even if it is purely for moral reasons, to invest a bit back into the country that's done so well for all of us. So I hope we start to see more and more of that. We're seeing some of it, but I hope we see more and more of that.
You and me both. What a pleasure. I could talk to you for hours. I have so many questions. This is so heartening. And, I'm glad to be the first to suggest, even though Washington, D.C. seems like a slimy place where you need to take a shower every 5 minutes. You know, I hope that at least you have some influence there. You're rock solid in all your observations, and clearly your morality is high. I would We need more people like you, Byron.
Well, Michelle, I appreciate it. I want to just say thank you for shining a light in this issue. And we need people like you that are that care and that are speaking out and that are highlighting some of the things that are going on nationally that can make us all better. So I really appreciate it.
All right. Hey, it's been so great talking to you. He is Byron Winthrop. The company is American Giant. See? American made. Like him, please don't forget every day just a little bit to be brave and do good. And we will see you next time.